Baseball Tonight is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Tuesday, April 27, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. A Buster only. I'm working from my home studio in New York. And Taylor, yesterday it was supposed to be a baggage claim Monday, but my flight, my red eye from LA to Atlanta was delayed. So my thanks to Tim and to Carl and to you for filling in that gap. And sorry to drop that middle of the night email on you saying I'm not going to make it on time.
I just imagined you like a wacky 90s movie where you're stuck in a suitcase and you're getting dragged down the gate to Hong Kong or something. You're like, no, let me out. I just want to go home. Glad you made it back.
Well, and I want to talk baseball. That was the thing. I mean, this, my window of time, my connection time was like an hour and 20 minutes. And as my plane was delayed, I'm like, okay, I got an hour and 10. Okay. I got an hour. Okay. I got 45 minutes. How in the world am I going to be able to get a window to talk baseball? So, you guys reached out to Carl Ravitch at the last minute, and a special thanks to Carl for adapting.
Absolutely. Those guys were great. Tim, completely unfazed in the morning, and you missed out on some good baseball talks. There's so much good stuff going on right now.
I know. Well, I'm going to reprise some of it. I got to talk about the Padres and Dodgers from the weekend, and we are going to talk about another blown replay call last night. And by the way, did Tim, I don't know if you or Tim noticed, I dropped an anchorman line into the middle of the script that I prepared for him. It was, I'm Tim Kirkjian and I have no idea where I am. Did he actually say that?
He did actually say that, but the reference completely flew over us. That's very funny that he did that.
Nice. I love it. Well, when I bring him on next time, I'll talk about how I totally sandbagged him. All right. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to LinkedIn.com/sports. And the Colorado Rockies are making moves. A front office shakeup. Jeff Breidich, the general manager of the Colorado Rockies, has stepped down. The Rockies said on Monday the decision was a mutual agreement with Breidich. His 7-year tenure included 2 playoff appearances and a falling out with third baseman Nolan Arenado that ultimately led to the Stars' offseason trade to the St. Louis Cardinals. The Astros starter, Jake Odorizzi, friend of the show, has been placed on the 10-day injured list with a strained muscle in his right arm. And second baseman Jose Altuve was activated from the injured list after a bout with COVID-19. Infielder Gavin Lux, right-hander Dennis Santana were both activated from the Dodgers injured list, while right-hander Mitch White was recalled from the alternate training site. The Dodgers continue to have injury issues. David Price going on the IL with a strained hamstring. Let's get to the good stuff. Braves, Cubs, Chris Bryant, off to a good start this year.
Bases loaded, 2 down. Bryant hits a high drive into left field, down the line, in the corner, back near the wall, and that ball is gone. It's a grand slam.
So that was Pat Hughes on the Cubs radio network. It turned a 4-0 deficit into a 4-all tie, but Freddie Freeman got a big hit.
Here it is. Swung on, lifted high and deep to right field. Headed for the chop house. Heads up out there. Gone! Home run! Freddie Freeman.
The great Joe Simpson with the call. 680, the fan. Yeah, it was out really quick. He had an absolute bomb. The Kansas City Royals finished a 4-game sweep of the Detroit Tigers, winning yesterday 3-2. The Royals' 14-7 record is tied for their best 21-game start to a season over the last 15 seasons. The Cleveland Indians walked it off last night.
High fly ball, deep left field. Lynn is back, looking up. It's gone to Souvenir City, and the Indians have their first walk-off of the year.
Yeah, they win their game. Last night, Shohei Ohtani started on the mound for the Angels. He had a really rough first inning, 29 pitches, threw only 11 strikes. But he also was raking. he was getting hits at the plate. That probably helped him bounce back on the mound. He dominated for the last 4 innings that he was on the mound. And he had this little gem right in the middle of the game.
The bullpen was used frequently in Houston. Ohtani squares around, pushes a bunt up the third baseline. Yeah, he can do that too.
Bunt for a hit now.
Matt Bascurian on the Angels television network. Yeah, Ohtani was pitching. He was hitting. He was bunting. He was doing everything. the Angels absolutely blow out their opponents last night. Jesse Winker had a game-winning hit against the Dodgers. L.A. perhaps reeling a bit after getting punched in the jaw by the Padres over the weekend. This was in the 10th inning.
Winker socks it to left. Beauty. And it's gone. Home run. A go-ahead solo shot by Jesse Winker, making a two-run tater.
Now, before we get to Jessica Mendoza and to Sarah Langs, and I think we're going to hear from Fernando Tatis Jr. as well, baseball is back, and so are your favorite teams and players. Catch the best of the bigs all season on ESPN Plus with more than 170 live MLB games featuring every star and every team in the league. Sign up now at ESPNPlus.com/baseball and listen to the latest CFB podcast before the first selection is made in Thursday night's NFL draft. Kevin Negandhi is peppering Mel Kiper Jr., his last-minute questions before the draft. And he asked Mel about his favorite TV show, Dallas. Follow the CFB podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of the show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Buster. Just go to Indeed.com/Buster right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Buster. Terms and conditions apply.
Jessica Mendoza is a game analyst for ESPN. And Jess, last night, your son pitched for the first time, and I know from talking with you before we got started here, it sounds like he's more new school than old school when it comes to on-field decorum.
Oh my gosh. Well, he's seven, and it was his first time pitching. We worked so hard on it. This is hilarious that we're talking about this, but he would literally pitch a strike, which, you know, in Little League Baseball, anyone who's ever been a part of seven-year-old Little League Baseball, throwing a strike is like hitting a grand slam. I mean, that is like, everything is amazing when that can actually happen. And so when he would throw a strike, he would jump up and down and cheer for himself and like literally applaud, be like, yes, yeah, it was me. I threw a strike. Yeah. It was just, I was literally crying, laughing so hard. I'm like, this is hilarious. I love Little League Baseball because of the emotions and all the kids, but yeah, when you throw a strike, actually make it over the plate, it's like almost a dog pile type moment.
Yeah. And I hope that no old school person tried to jump in and say, hey, act like you've been there before.
No way. No. I mean, all the kids are like that. We're still trying to get them to figure out where first base is. So, I mean, it's pretty basic at this level, but it's so fun. I'm the coach also. So I'm in charge of all these little guys. Nice. That crack me up. Yeah, no.
Don't let any old school people get, ruin your son's joy. That's for sure.
No, they'd be booted out in a minute if they tried.
So I know that Padres Dodgers captured the imagination of a lot of fans. It was in about the because of the response that I got directly. It was in the 10th inning, and I'm sitting there, and a text message drops in, and I was talking on air, so I didn't have a chance to process it. And then after the game, I look down at the text message, and it says, Padres, Dodgers, I could watch 162 of these, LOL. Well, I went and looked, and the text was from Charles Barkley. You got Charles Barkley talking about how exciting it was to watch Padres, Dodgers. I think that's, as Jace Tingler told us before Sunday's game, the Padres manager, this is great for baseball, this rivalry.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, to be honest, like, I got more people asking, talking, like, Monday morning about baseball. And in April, it just doesn't happen, like, across the board from people that don't watch the sport regularly. And by the way, I don't know what's cooler, though, like, the fact that Charles Barkley, like, wants 162 of these, or the fact that he has your cell phone and he's texting you in the middle of the game. So I think that's pretty cool. I hear he's going to come on the podcast too, because of course now you got to have him talking baseball.
Yeah, he's coming on the podcast on Thursday after he texted me like, hey, you want to come and talk about Padres Dodgers? And he jumped at it. One thing that jumped out at me, and look, you know, we've talked about Fernando Tatis Jr. We know how great the Dodgers are, the depth in their starting pitching. Jess, you know, this year I've been lucky enough to go to these ballparks and to see these games in person on Sunday Night Baseball. And my God, what jumped out at me watching that game on Sunday, the Padres base running is potentially difference making. You don't see teams run the bases the way the Padres are, where you could tell they are looking for every advantage. You know, when Jimmy Nelson came into the game, it was clear, you know, with his big delivery, he was struggling to hold runners. Other Dodger pitchers, same thing. They got a big leg kick. Padres are going. I mean, it really stood out. And I, you know, as I processed that after the game and I'm thinking about it, I'm like, that is going to be an incredible weapon for them now, because so few teams run. And when you have Fernando Tatis Jr. and Mateo and a Tommy Pham and everyone looking for an opportunity to go, teams are just not going to be accustomed to that.
Well, and that to me was actually the biggest takeaway from Fernando Tatis Jr.'s performance over the weekend. Yes, he had 5 home runs, and there was so much exciting stuff to talk about within the Padres and the wins that they had over the Dodgers. But to me, it was actually in that 11th inning. And you guys talked about it on Sunday Night Baseball so well, to set it up, to see the lead of Tatis Jr., to read Jimmy Nelson and the length of time it was taking for him to get it to the catcher at home. Justin Turner, I know, Buster, you talked about how Turner was kind of watching, anticipating, making sure he could get over to cover third base. But really, ultimately, the fact that Tatis Jr. was able to read instinctually go, and I mean, there wasn't even a throw. That's how, like, insanely well read that entire play was. And then what happened 2 batters later, Hosmer hits a sacrifice fly to get the go ahead run, and they win the game. And we see right now that runner on second base, once extra inning starts, it's things like that, when you can get that extra base with less than 2 outs, that's going to be the difference maker. Because we a lot of times don't see that runner on second score, because there's no try at all to get that run to third base. Everyone's just up there hacking. It's frustrating me to watch, just because this was a rule I played with my entire career. And the game plan was always, how do you get that runner to third base? Whether it was traditionally trying to bunt them over, whether it was hitting a ground ball to the right side. I mean, there were so many different options. So to see Fernando Tatis Jr., the base running the Padres over the weekend, it made me so happy, because it's just a game right now of home runs and strikeouts and walks. That's what it feels like. And the game is so much more exciting when there's movement and there's reads, and you can talk about all of the science and the IQ behind taking an extra base, because it's not just about speed.
No, not at all. And I was texting back and forth with some Padres people about that yesterday, about how all year this is going to be a weapon for them. They're going to go through stretches like all teams do, where they're not going to hit as well, but this is always going to be a part of their game. And look, Fernando Tatis Jr. is struggling defensively right now. He's obviously an excellent hitter. He has great power, but I'm with you. The base running might be one of the very best things that he brings to the table every day. All right, I want to ask you about what happened in the game between the Oakland Athletics and the Tampa Bay Rays last night. Elvis Andrus was going home, and this is what happened. Give a listen.
Here's the play, folks. Nobody's there to see you, Adrian. Watch this. Watch the right hand on the bag.
Still, I mean, his, on the bag. His hand is all over the plate, and now the tag is applied.
Yeah, that was from the Athletics Television Network. You heard Glenn Kuiper. You heard Dallas Braden on there, our old friend. Jess, it was one of plays where when I saw it live, my initial thought was, okay, he was safe because it looked like he beat the throw. And then you see the replay and you're like, okay, well, they're going to overturn that out call that was made on Andrus because it's not close. He clearly was safe and they didn't overturn it. It was confirmed by confirmed is probably too strong of a word. I even looked at the explanation MLB sent out last night. They probably said there was inconclusive evidence to overturn that call, which is an absolute joke. I don't know how anybody watches that replay last night and determines anything other than Elvis Andrus was safe. And Major League Baseball, because of this last night, and you saw what happened, like right after that call was made, the replay decision was announced. Bob Melvin lost his mind, ran out, was ejected, yelled at umpires he knows didn't make the decision. But I think Major League Baseball absolutely today needs to come out and issue a statement, just as they should have in the Phillies and Braves decision on Sunday Night Baseball a few weeks ago. I don't know how you let something like this stand without admitting they blew it.
Well, and especially because that's the entire purpose of replay. So when you're sitting there, whether it's as a fan, as a commentator, and we've all been there where it's taking 3 minutes, 4 minutes, and you're like, oh my gosh, like make a decision. And it's frustrating because it pauses the game, but what's the purpose, right? The purpose is we need to get these calls right. And so there's an understanding that even though you're frustrated watching the replay for maybe the third time that game or the fifth time that week, is we're going to make sure that the umpires are getting the calls right. And in order to do that, and Buster, I've been in New York. I've seen the replay center, all the different angles. And in fact, they get more angles that was even seen during that game. They are able to have access to every single camera. It's unbelievable, really. And the whole reason is you sit there and wait because you know, okay, finally, we're actually going to get all these calls right. And so when that doesn't happen, and it was one thing to have it happen on Sunday Night Baseball in a huge public, like anticipated difference-making call, but to now see it reoccurring, I mean, you could hear the frustration from Dallas Braden even on that call, just like, wait, he's clearly safe. And they're able to look at it. And I get that there's always going to be frustration with umpires and getting the calls wrong. You know, I always feel for them because it's like when you're going at a fast pace and trying to make these calls, which is why there's replay so that you can actually slow it down and see the thing that everyone else can see. So this, it's not even just that they got the call wrong. It's the fact that the replay review slows down the game. And if they're not going to get the calls right, then it's, what are we doing?
Right. And to me, if you want to maintain trust in this system among the players, among the managers, among the coaches, when you mess up, and look, I'm with you. I feel like as part of my role on Sunday Night Baseball, you know, pre-COVID, I met with the umpires every week. I know those guys. They're great guys. You know, they try to do the right thing. They try to get calls right. So the idea that they don't care is ridiculous. But when you have a situation like this, and it's clear that they got it wrong, and there's no acknowledgement of that mistake, then what you have is this underlying buzz among people at the team level saying, you know what? What are we doing here? You know, are we just flipping a coin there? Are these guys just trying to protect their buddies? The conspiracy theories start rolling in, and the lack of confidence just builds. I think because of that, you need a statement to come from Rob Manfred or someone, you know, maybe it's Mike Hill, who's in the commissioner's office, to come out and say, we blew it. We've seen the NBA do it. We've seen the NFL do it. I don't understand why Major League Baseball to this point has been unwilling to do it.
Absolutely. No. And it's the accountability of just, hey, we're messing up. We're trying to figure things out. And like I said, like I've seen the replay review room. It's unbelievable. And so just trying to figure out, go in and being like, okay, you three, you made the call that he was still safe. What did you see? Do you need help? Like maybe there's something that you need to improve on, whatever it might be. But the fact is if we're going to have replay review in game, we're going to have these 4 or 5 minutes, which seem like, because it's always a crucial play, and now you've paused the game to be able to do it, then we need to make sure that we're getting it right every time.
I want to see if you agree with me. When you watch a replay of it, Elvis Andrus's hand slides across home plate. He had time, it seemed like, to build a sandcastle in the middle of home plate before the glove actually touches him, which is, I can't figure out why anyone could watch that play and think that he was actually out. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I don't think anyone did watch it and was like, he's absolutely out. I think there's this fallback on there's not enough evidence to be able to overturn it. And that's what is relied on. A lot of times you're seeing, like, when I'm doing a game and we're watching the same replays over and over again, you fall back on, okay, I think it's this, but if there's not enough evidence, they're not going to overturn it. In this case, it's clear. I mean, it's like not just that his hand touches, but it's like another whole hand before the glove even gets to him. When you're able to break it down that slow.
Exactly. Taylor, would you agree? Jump in here real quick. I want to make sure people know we're not like seeing things.
No, absolutely. They got it wrong. He's laying all over the plate. I don't understand what the discussion is. I don't understand why Major League Baseball can't admit it was wrong. I mean, even when the NBA does it or the NFL does it, like, it takes a little sting off. It shows that they have a little bit of self-awareness, and baseball is showing that it doesn't by not, you know, calling this out.
Yeah, and if they don't call it out, it feeds into the idea among players and among staffers that they just don't care to get it right, which is a real problem. All right, so last night, Shohei Ohtani had a great night. He pitched, Jess. He struggled to throw strikes in the first inning, but he was dominant thereafter. He hit. He was driving the ball over the place, and he dropped down a bunt. Another Shohei Ohtani show.
It was awesome. And what I loved about it the most is the fact that he struggled big time. And it's been his command that we've seen with his pitching now, even going back to last year. And, you know, you felt like, because I watched that game being out, you know, and just literally seeing him struggle, you could feel like, oh my gosh, this is going to be a long game for him. And this is the difference to me. And Joe Maddon talked about it post game of him being able to hit in the games that he's pitching. Because him being able to then turn around and think about, like, every play, like, I remember this when I pitched, like, even on defense, like, just to be able to have that other side, to be able to have something to pick yourself up. And then all of a sudden he's out there, he's running the bases, he's scoring runs, he's hitting it, he's doing Shohei things at the plate. He gets back on the mound. Not only does he settle in, then he becomes the dominant pitcher he knows that he is. The command comes back. He starts literally the swing and miss. I think he struck out like 5 in a row at one point. And that, to me, I credit the Angels so much for taking the step this year to say, you know what, you can hit in the games that you're pitching, which is really unheard of. There's so many stats about, I mean, even last night he made history. He was like the first batter since Babe Ruth to lead the league in home runs and take the mound. You know, there's so many things he's doing, but I go back to Little League. And when you can hit and pitch in the same game, it just allows you to be able to, if you have the talent, instead of, you know, having the bubble wrap all around you, to be able to pick yourself up. And that's exactly what Shohei Ohtani did it. And then he came back out and was dominant. I seriously think he would not have gotten out of that struggle mode unless he was able to go back and pick up a bat and help his team out.
That was a great point. And he's so good so far that he is overshadowing maybe the greatest player in the history of baseball. Mike Trout, as of this morning, leads the majors in batting average, .426, on-base percentage, .539, slugging percentage, .820. And Jess, for years, you know this, the perception about his kryptonite was high fastballs. Well, guess what? This year, he seems to have figured something out. In 2018, against high fastballs, he hit .226. In 2019, .218. Hembo sent me these numbers, by the way. In 2020, .231 batting average. This year, Mike Trout against high fastballs, .333 batting average, .600 on base percentage, .583 slugging percentage. And what those numbers say to me, Jess, and look, you played at a high level and I didn't, but what those numbers say to me is he has figured out how to discern between strikes and balls at the top of the strike zone, because it's clear he's drawing a lot of walks with that 600 on base percentage. And when it's a strike, he's doing damage. .333 average, .583 slugging percentage.
Yeah, and he always has, except for those high fastballs. And a lot of times he just lays off of them. And I've seen in games, Buster, where he still will lay off of certain high fastballs, certain pitchers. He probably understands going into the game which pitchers he can be able to get barrel on those high fastballs. And I mean, this is a batter. You talked about this, remember, preseason, even coming into the year, about him just really beating himself up last year, just like, I needed to be better and I was not, and I need to improve. And I mean, the accountability piece of Mike Trout, and it just shows he gets better and better every year. We talk about him. I love that he's getting overshadowed by Shohei Ohtani, just because, you know, I bet he loves that too. But the point is, I think for every young player, and there's so many that look up and watch Mike Trout, is really the epitome of what the greatest player right now looks like. And to me, it's more the accountability piece than anything. The fact that he looks at himself in the mirror every day and says, what do I need to do to get better? And then he does it. And that just doesn't happen when you have the talent level of a guy like Mike Trout.
You're 100% right. All right, Jess, thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Buster.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Fernando Tatis Jr. talked with L. Duncan on SportsCenter. Give a listen.
How do you navigate your personality in a sport that is dominated by unwritten rules?
I don't know. I guess I try to smile and try to get through it and just play the game I love. And if I'm doing it with love and with the same passion every single day, I don't think I'm doing anything wrong against nobody else.
Your heroics, of course, this weekend, not met without a little bit of controversy from Trevor Bauer, who did accuse you of peeking back at the catcher's signal before your second home run against him on Saturday. What do you say to those that accuse you of potentially cheating?
That was one. What about the other ones? I mean, come on. Let's play baseball, guys. That's not true. And no, you know what happened, but I'm definitely not a cheater. That's why I've not worked the rest of my life to be cheating on a game that I played my entire life.
0-0-9-6.
This is The Numbers Game with Sarah Langs.
Sarah Langs, reporter, producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, Jeff Breidich's tenure as general manager of the Rockies comes to an end. If you can, just sum up, what his impact on the Rockies was.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, they had a .478 winning percentage in that span when he was in charge, starting with the beginning of the 2015 season. I went through April 25th since yesterday was his last day there. And, you know, that ranked 22nd in the majors in that span. But I think that it's a little bit more complicated than that, or there's more to it than just the winning percentage. Because if you look at it, they did make the playoffs twice in that span. And yes, it was a wild card. They've never won the division. But, you know, in a division that is increasingly tougher and tougher, they were at least competitive in those two seasons. And they had some really good talent there. And even if you look at the teams below them in winning percent, I mean, you have the Royals there, and the Royals won a World Series in that span. For the Rockies, it's always going to be about the ERA, right? They had the worst ERA in that span, but they're a Coors Field. I'm sure that any couple year span in Major League history since they came into the league, since 1993, they have the worst ERA. So, you know, not a great overall winning tenure, but they did make the playoffs twice.
So part of the narrative is that Jeff ruined the relationship between the organization and Nolan Arenado. And I got to say, I find that to be a little suspect. I mean, my goodness, they did invest $260 million in Nolan Arenado with Jeff as general manager. Now, you could say that maybe Jeff didn't make the moves that Nolan liked, or maybe Jeff's personality rubbed Nolan the wrong way. But it's not like there wasn't good faith from the Rockies toward Nolan Arenado.
It certainly seems like there was. I mean, you know, I'm not privy to any of those conversations. None of us are. But they, again, they had those playoff appearances in that span. They gave him that huge contract. We all remember that press conference at Salt River Fields where they're sitting there and everybody's smiling and happy. And of course, we come to basically 2 years after that. And we're at this point, he's wearing a Cardinals uniform. But it seems hard to believe that it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, and it might be that both of them didn't necessarily handle the relationship as well as they could have. I do think the change in the front office is going to make it easier for the Rockies now to do what they really need to do, which is begin to market Trevor's story and begin to talk to other teams about trading him so they get as much return as they can before he becomes a free agent in the fall. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number three.
Number three is five. So Rhys Hoskins has five home runs in his last four games. He's really been heating up. That's the most home runs by any Phillies player in a four-game span since Dominic Brown also had five in four games in May 2013. That's a little Phillies blast from the past there. But he has eight home runs, which is leading the majors. Obviously, it's very, very early. But the last Phillies player to lead the majors in home runs was Ryan Howard when he hit 48 in 2008. But the thing that really jumps out to me on his page right now, and he's a really, really hot last week or so, but he's not walking at all. He has four walks this season. So right now he's slugging .614 with a .293 on base percentage. The highest slugging percentage for any player in a qualified season that's already completed with a sub 300 on base percentage was .514 by Mike Jacobs in 2008. He had a .299 OBP in that .514 slugging percentage. And we're talking about the Rockies. It is worth noting Ryan McMahon this year on base percentage .299, slugging .571. So two of these guys who are hitting the ball pretty well, but not taking their walks whatsoever.
Number two.
Number two is .652. So that's the Giants win percentage right now. You wouldn't know it if you speak to my Giants fan mother, who is the most pessimistic fan I know. But .652 winning percentage, tied for the best in the National League right now with the Dodgers. So they're also tied for the NL West lead. The last time the Giants had at least a share of the best record in the National League this many games into a season was in July 2016. If you remember 2016, they were leading the division. They got up to one of the worst post-All-Star break starts of any division winner ever, ended up being in the wild card game. Madison Bumgarner outduels Noah Syndergaard. But this is their best 23-game start to a season since 2003 when they started 18-5. And they have a plus 22 run differential, which is actually their fourth highest since 1975 through 23 games, only higher in 2010 when they won the World Series, in 2002, and in 1992.
Number one.
Number one is 49. So Corbin Burnes is now up to 49 strikeouts this season, still no walks. And it's worth noting he gave up five runs, four earned, to the Marlins last night. It's not all about just not walking people, but it is crazy that he still has not walked anybody. So he's now three away from breaking that record of most strikeouts in a season before your first walk, which is held by Kenley Jansen, 2017. Obviously a reliever. Burnes already has the starter record, but he's only thrown 23 pitches in three ball counts. I was just looking at the graph of it, at the pitch chart before we were chatting here, and really only one of those pitches is even like very obviously outside the zone, and Tommy Edman fouled it off. So it's just really crazy. I mean, watching his start last night, every time I looked up, it was 0-2 or 1-2. And again, he gave up five runs, four of them were earned. He did not pitch great, but this control is just insane.
So Sarah, look, I just got done talking with Jess about the Padres and Dodgers. And what absolutely jumped out at me watching the Padres in person was how incredibly aggressively they run the bases. I mean, it was staggering to the point that I'm like, man, this is going to be a factor in the postseason. And I think part of the reason why is because so few teams run these days. So few teams are aggressive on the bases. That it's something, it's an element that's completely different for teams to deal with. And it kind of reminds me, remember we were going through that stretch when John Lester wasn't throwing pickoff moves to first base, but a lot of teams couldn't take advantage of it because they weren't accustomed to running. Well, the Padres, oh my God, they were just, it was like a track meet.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking of in that in the game on Sunday, that double steal towards the end there was like a key play. And they had a handful of stolen bases just in those final two games alone, let alone in the entire series. And it just seems like such a great thing to take advantage of. Because as you're saying, I mean, teams aren't used to this these days. We don't see this happening very much. And I know you made the reference to John Lester. I'm trying to remember there was a Jake Arrieta start. Right, this that led to Miguel Montero no longer being on the Cubs, where I want to say Trey Turner stole like four bases off him in one game, something like that, back when the Cubs were really, really good. And I just, there are these certain instances, especially in the last few years, where you really remember a certain pitcher or team getting rattled by a team running rampant on the bases because it doesn't happen very much. So it just adds to, I think, what makes them such a complete team. I still think the Dodgers are better. But yeah. I think the Padres, that electricity, I mean, that's a great way to sum it up.
All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets for a Tuesday. First up, we have our pal Clubby. He writes in, with expanded rosters potentially coming back in 2022 and the Dodgers' exceptional organization depth, when will be the next time the Dodgers miss the postseason?
Yeah, no time in the foreseeable future. And I think what Clubby probably meant to say was rather than expanded rosters, he probably meant to say expanded playoffs. I don't see the Dodgers missing the playoffs for the foreseeable future. Like they're that deep. They've got their system in place. They've got great people in the front office. They got all the buy-in from the players and they're going to keep keeping great players. So it's going to be a long time.
Next up, we have David at Baseball Fan 1918. A question from the weekend that you retweeted, so I figured that was like a virtual bookmark for this one. Shohei Ohtani is pitching Monday night against the Rangers. He currently has 16 RBI as a hitter and 14 Ks as a pitcher. Does he finish the year with more strikeouts or more RBI? Love the pod.
Yep, David, I'm going to say strikeouts. I think it's just easier to get those. He probably is going to have some slumps along the way as a hitter. But he's always going to strike people out, even in those games in which he struggles to find the strike zone.
Next up, we have Brad Barber at Brad Barber writes in, why does Buster always omit the 1906 Cubs when he compares to the greatest teams in history? What is your beef with the 1906 Cubs, Buster?
Or the 27 Yankees or the 39 Yankees, you could put in the same category. And look, the 06 Cubs were an amazing team. 27 Yankees are always in for a lot of people in that conversation. It comes down to this for me. It's pre-segregation. Like I look at the sport pre-1947 is just being different. And there are only 16 teams and a lot of the teams have financial difficulties. I think it was a lot easier back then to be completely dominant or completely terrible for that matter. Do you agree with me, Taylor? I don't know. I don't look at pre-47. It doesn't even feel like it's a complete sport.
Modern era. Come on. I mean, who was around in 1906? No one was alive anymore.
Not
we don't
me.
Know.
Tim might have been, but not me.
We don't know how good these teams actually were. Forget it. Last one for today. John Sumners at John Sumners writes in, are the Mets wasting DeGrom's prime more than the Angels are wasting Mike Trout's prime?
We'll see. Give it some time. Look, if they don't make the playoffs this year, I think it's a legitimate question because, Trout being a position player is probably going to have a longer period of prime than DeGrom will. But man, DeGrom right now, he's as good as any pitcher I've seen since Pedro Martinez in the late 90s.
Wow. Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please subscribe to, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
That's it for today. My thanks to Jess, to Sarah, to Taylor, and to Fernando Tatis Jr. and to Al Duncan. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.